Welcome. This is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. Our guest today is Scott Sampson, a dinosaur paleontologist, host of the PBS kids television show, The Dinosaur Train, and a passionate advocate for reconnecting people with nature. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you very much, Will. Pleasure to be with you.
What do you believe is at the root of humanity's disconnection from nature?
Well, I think it's been going on for a long time slowly, and it's just accelerated in the past generation or so. So, I mean, starting with agriculture, we really started to separate ourselves from nature pretty fundamentally when we started to manipulate nature, and we created cities which, at some level, were designed to separate us from the natural world, and still do to the present day. But in the past generation, we've seen this dramatic acceleration where folks like you and I were growing up basically with, you know, free-range childhoods, and we wandered around all over the place. And nowadays, kids don't get that. The average child today spends 7 to 10 hours a day looking at screens and like 4 to 7 minutes a day playing outdoors. So that free-range childhood is gone, and the reasons for that in the past generation are several. One of them is the fear factor, the fear of strangers. Another one is the fact that we overschedule kids and they have longer school days and more homework. And yet a third is the siren call of technology, of screens. So it's this concatenation of factors which has really led to the crisis that we really have today. And it is a crisis in the sense that children's health is threatened, the places that we live are threatened, and we really need to turn this around just as quickly as we got to this present point in about a generation.
Well, I love hearing you say free-range childhood. When I'm disconnected, I behave differently, and it doesn't usually feel good to me.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I'm fortunate enough to live close enough to walk to work every day, and if I don't have that time, I don't feel quite whole, and I don't feel connected to where I am, things like that. And if I go a few weeks and I haven't been on a hike in nature, I also really struggle, and it definitely has an impact on me as well. And we know that it has an impact on kids and adults, and that just that small amount of time, even a half-hour walk in a park, can be critical for somebody's health and well-being.
Yeah, if my connection's weak, I actually feel unhealthy, and I do unhealthy things to Mother Nature and myself. In contrast, when I'm connected, I'm alive, and yes, it's a celebration of joy and vitality, even at my age.
Yeah, and you raise a great point. The fact that we're disconnected makes it easier to abuse nature and not be aware of the impacts that we're having on the natural world. And the more that we're aware, the more that we understand what's going on around us, the more we're embedded in the places that we live, the more likely it is that we're going to take care of them.
And this is actually the major reason you're at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. Although you're involved with the dinosaurs, this is where you're on fire.
It is. It's why my family and I moved from the coast of California to Colorado about 2.5 years ago. We did that because there was this opportunity here to help to connect a metro-level population with the natural world, and that was the challenge that I came here to undertake.
Explain to us the value of regularly just being with a child in a place where you sit quietly most days and simply observe with all your senses being open and being still in this way.
Yeah, we know from all kinds of studies that the two most critical ingredients to promote a nature connection in anybody, any child in particular, two things. One is abundant time spent in nature, and that usually means nearby nature, because otherwise we couldn't get to it all the time. And the second one is a grown-up to share in the experience, to share in the adventure. And that grown-up is critical because only by seeing a grown-up placing value on the natural world do children start to do the same thing. Nature is something that you can't ignore, especially if you're trained to ignore it. And if you grew up in a family where no one ever notices nature, it's very unlikely that you will, unless you have a mentor outside your family. So just having that at least one person, and preferably more, who values the natural world, who's willing to go out there and just sit there and be quiet, if kids see that, then they will pick up on that value, and they'll start to do the same things their whole life.
And there seems to be a measurable benefit to health and self-esteem and identity and even stress reduction.
Yeah, it really helps across the board, and that's one of the things we haven't communicated enough to parents. We sort of think about nature as a luxury, a leisure option, that if we have time for it, maybe we get to on the weekend. If we don't, then it's not a big deal. And we really need to start thinking about getting kids to nature the same way we think about literacy. We read to young children every day. With older children, we insist they read every day because we value literacy. Nature, arguably, has greater an impact on lives than reading, in the sense that it affects our physical health, our mental health, our emotional health, and it is critical, arguably, to raising a well-adjusted child who will then turn into a well-adjusted adult.
With the scale of the challenges facing our children and grandchildren, having a disconnected child can be dangerous.
Yeah, I would even take it a step further and say that we are at a pivotal moment in history, that this generation, arguably more than any other, will have a greater impact on the future of the planet than in all human history, 200,000 years. And the reason for that is that if this disconnect between people and nature persists for another generation, those of us like you and I that grew up being immersed in nature will be gone, or at least out of the picture for the most part. And if the parents coming up in the world don't value nature because they never had that experience, then we will have lost that connection and we won't value it anymore. And that could be a crisis for both people and the environment. I mean, we know there's a U.S. Surgeon General who came out a few years ago with data to argue that this generation of kids may be the first to have a life expectancy shorter than that of their parents because of obesity, attention deficit disorder, diabetes. All these diseases have been skyrocketing in children and going, being present in younger and younger ages. Combine that with the fact that who is ever going to work to preserve or take care of a place that they never have any interaction with? The screen looks the same in Denver as it does in Timbuktu. If you want people to really act on behalf of a place and become sustainable, they have to care about that place, and they won't care unless they have a bunch of time outside connecting with that place.
And when we talked before, you mentioned a study that showed time in nature dramatically improves academic performance and scores.
Yeah, there is growing evidence that place-based education, where kids are getting outside on a regular, if not daily, basis, and they're understanding that place, and they're learning about English and math and history and science through that place, that those kids do better academically across the board, in addition to the fact that they tend to develop a stronger connection with that local place. So the evidence has only been accumulating in the past few years to become solid, and the word is still getting out there. But yeah, I think that we can start to document very clearly now that outdoor place-based education is a very strong model for learning.
And do I understand correctly, nature deficit disorder has now been recognized as an official medical condition which predisposes to pathology and inflammatory conditions?
Yeah, there is an argument out there to that effect. And so, it was about six weeks ago, a number of scientists, including some Nobel Prize winners and nominees, published a paper in which they put forth the biodiversity hypothesis, and they put together all this information, all this data, which argues pretty conclusively that the greater the diversity of species that live around somebody, the healthier that person will be, that they are less likely to develop various inflammatory diseases, including allergies and asthma and things like that. So that is one more piece of the puzzle to suggest that people who have no access to nature, who really do suffer from a nature deficit, will be less healthy than people who are immersed in nature, even if that nature is in the middle of the city.
So we could say that disconnection is a risk factor.
Yes, absolutely. Disconnection is a risk factor. Keeping kids inside is a huge risk factor, and getting them outside and connecting with nature is critical. And even things like, you know, balance, agility, just motor skills. We know that kids who play in natural playgrounds develop better motor skills than kids who play on metal and plastic playgrounds, let alone kids who don't play outside at all. So kids are going to take risks when they get to be adolescents. We know that. It's built into their brains. They are going to go and take risks. Don't we want them to be as well prepared as possible? And how can they possibly get prepared to take risks if we don't let them have those risks when they're younger? And so it's really important that we let kids get outside, yes, but we also allow them to climb trees and get in the mud and climb up on rocks and all these things that were part of the childhood of most of us who were over the age of 30 or 40, but is now somewhat rare in children. We need to start saying yes to get, you know, when kids want to pick up a stick or throw a rock or get in the water or climb the tree, whatever it might be, so that they can take those risks and they can build those emotional connections and they can build those physical skills and know how to undertake risk and deal with it effectively because they've had those experiences.
We started learning as early as 1967 just how huge the significance is of play deprivation, that play in nature is not trivial, but it equals learning.
Yeah, it turns out that the most important kind of play is free play or unstructured play, which also is facing extinction these days. Often when kids are outside, they are doing sports like soccer on a field. They're playing games by somebody else's rules. And the whole notion of going out and coming up with games on your own and using the materials around you to invent games and scenarios, that is disappearing pretty rapidly. And we know, once again, from psychological research that free play is important because it helps build up a sense of imagination, of creativity, of problem solving. It turns out that one of the ways that kids learn about the world, even the science of the world, physics and things like that, is simply through experimentation. When a kid puts up a board and rolls a rock down that board, they're learning about physics. And we tend to devalue that kind of interaction. We look at play as something that's kind of frivolous, that we put in the interstitial parts of children's lives when they're not doing the real stuff like school or violin lessons. But it turns out that unstructured play is critical for their bodies and their minds.
To be clear with people, we call that non-contest play. And the other part of it that is huge from my perspective is that it's the initiation of the discovery of who we are.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to personal identity. And how do you define that identity? And nature turns out to be something that can play a critical part in one's identity. And as I mentioned, all adolescents are going to go out there and take risks. And if you establish nature as the ground in which that risk-taking occurs, then it's much more likely that adolescents will turn to it for risk-taking when they're older, whether that's skiing or hiking or surfing or rock climbing or whatever that might be. And we can do it in such a way that they're trained to be effective and safe as they're taking those risks. And as they're doing that, that also builds their sense of identity, their confidence in who they are, how they view themselves, how they fit into the world. So I completely agree with you. It is tied to identity.
And a connected identity, connected with nature, is huge because then I'm less vulnerable to somebody imposing on me their agenda, serving an external agenda. I can make my own decisions and evaluate how I operate and live out of this place of connection.
Right. I think it's ironic in this day when kids are always trying to be connected through the internet, that the feeling of disconnection is rising in many kids. And it's like being in the middle of a city and feeling alone. And that is what a lot of kids are facing today, that they feel this compulsion to stay connected, but it isn't really fulfilling that connection need. And that's one thing that nature really can fulfill. And those experiences in nature can fill us up and make us feel deeply connected to the world.
This is William Evans. We're shifting gears. And I'm conversing with Scott Sampson, who has recently written a wonderful book, How to Raise a Wild Child. So, Scott, when a child connects in nature, there's meaning flowing through them. And they're living their own story. We know about the power of story, and the story feeds back the breath of life and meaning into us and our surroundings.
Yeah, one of the things that has been demonstrated again and again is that narrative is the tool by which we basically make sense of the world. That it is true of almost all education, it's true of indigenous cultures, that the narratives we tell ourselves dictate, and the metaphors we use dictate how we see the world. And so if we can create stories that are nature-based, like indigenous mythologies, the equivalent of that, that allow us to understand where we live by how those places came to be, for example, then that also gives our lives meaning and helps to make sense of our identities, too. So I agree.
Many of us remember the book The Last Child in the Woods by Richard Louv. And you've picked up the baton and written this beautiful sequel, How to Raise a Wild Child. Tell us a little about that.
I did love Last Child in the Woods, and I'm a friend of Richard Louv. And that book struck a chord, and it's been out for 10 years and really launched this Children in Nature movement. And one of the things that's happened is that the movement is growing, but it's still largely a white, affluent movement. And when I went out there looking for a book on how to connect kids with nature, I didn't find one. So Richard Louv rang the alarm bell and got us all convinced that there is something out there that we need to be concerned about with this disconnect between kids and nature. And yet there wasn't an offering that helped parents and educators and other caregivers, you know, have the basic tools to go out and start it tomorrow. And that's what this book, Wild Child, is really all about. And in How to Raise a Wild Child, I lay it out so anybody can start tomorrow free of charge, just getting kids connected. And it takes a developmental approach because obviously the process of connecting kids with nature changes from early childhood to middle childhood and then through adolescence. And so I address the needs and longings of each of those ages based on the current research and how to tie into those longings to help kids really deepen their nature connection.
Yeah, my sense is you gave us a how-to manual, especially how to become nature mentors for children.
Yeah, it will not happen without mentors. As I mentioned, you need both those elements. You've got to get the kids outside having time in nature, but you also need those adult mentors. And Rachel Carson taught us this very same thing in the 1950s, and now the research has proven her correct. And so becoming a nature mentor turns out to be way easier than most people imagined. There's a lot of folks who feel like, I don't know anything about nature. How can I possibly be a nature mentor? And the interesting thing about mentoring, at least in this sense, is that you don't need to be an expert. You don't need to have all the answers or any answers. That it turns out that questions are far more powerful at inspiring imagination and curiosity than answers. That oftentimes, if a kid asks you a question, even if you know the answer, the wrong thing to do is to give them that answer. That often you can extend that curiosity by saying, well, what do you think? And it turns out that that's what kids are really needing and wanting from us much of the time, that if you give them the answer, you sort of end the interaction. Whereas if you say, well, what do you think? Why do you think that bird is so colorful? Or that we're not seeing that today? Or why are the leaves falling off the trees? And if you don't know the answers, that's just fine. Get the kid thinking about it. And then if they're still really curious, you can always go to, you know, the internet or some other source and really co-discover the answer. So the key to here to being a mentor is instead of being the sage on the stage, you're sort of the guide on the side. You're the co-discoverer, the co-investigator, the co-adventurer that is embarking on this great exploration with the kids.
Yeah, and you don't avoid a chapter on smartphones and tablets and laptops and television, and actually label these influences dangerous liaisons.
Yeah, so I think all of this screen technology is not going to go away. And what I am not arguing in this book is that we need to turn off all the screens and go back to nature and live in the woods. That isn't going to happen. The technology is here to stay. That instead, what we need to do is embrace nature the same way that we're currently embracing technology. There's a term that's starting to rise now, that we need to foster techno-biophilic cities, which means cities in which we love nature and we love technology. And in this respect, at sometimes you do need to turn off the technology to connect with nature deeply and open up all your senses and really listen and taste and feel and see the natural world around you. But other times, the technology can help you. You can take amazing photographs of nature that you can then go to share with your friends or turn into a photo essay. You can use GPS technology to do geocaching and go basically treasure hunting in gorgeous natural places. You can use apps to discover things about nature, whether it's rocks or stars or plants or animals. So there's lots of technology that we can use to deepen our nature connection as well. The key here is that right now the balance is heavily weighted toward technology, and we need to up the nature side of things so that we do bring things into closer or greater balance.
Yeah, because that disconnected state of being immersed in technology, you quote a Stanford researcher who refers to the fracturing of the self caused by excessive reliance on technology, and mention also that some neuroscientists speculate abuse of digital technologies without enough nature connection can stunt a youngster's normal growth.
Yeah, and going back to your point about identity, that it can, if there's too much technology in a child's life and not enough nature, it can hamper that child's ability to form their own personal sense of identity. And so I think that that's key as well.
We tried working with this with Richard Louv and what he'd done with the federal legislation titled No Child Left Inside Act. And it was approved by the House but never voted on by the Senate. And you've called for a revolution now that envisions a collaboration of existing organizations building great parks and green space alliances.
Yeah, I think that if we look at the scale of the problem that we're facing, that the standard solutions aren't going to work. We're not going to be able to scale them. You can go to any major city in this country and find dozens, if not hundreds, of organizations that are actively working to connect kids with nature, whether that's museums, zoos, aquariums, botanical gardens, wilderness outfitters, environmental educators. There's many, many, many of these organizations. And yet, despite this plethora of organizations that are doing this kind of work, it's pretty clear that we are as disconnected at this moment as we have ever been. So although these organizations are doing tremendous work and really changing lives at the level of dozens, hundreds, sometimes thousands of individuals, at the metro scale, we're just not moving the needle. And so a different approach is needed. And what I argue in the book is that that approach, it's often called collective impact now, although that's tied with a certain process of how to do this. But effectively, the premise is that we can't get to the scaling of this and make this movement every child's movement, no matter what their skin color or family income, unless we collaborate in major collaborations that fundraise as a collaboration, that institute programs that can scale across these different organizations. And if we do that, then we can create new models for even rethinking what a city is. As I mentioned, cities are traditionally the places where the wild things aren't And if we are going to invite nature into the cities, it's as simple as planting native plants, because native plants will attract native insects. Native insects will attract native birds and other vertebrates. And if we made the cities nature rich, well, it turns out that they're much healthier for people as well as the plants and animals. And that kind of transformative change will only happen if we have these major coalitions driving the efforts.
You've got a beautiful book and an important vision. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Will. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I appreciate your support and all this effort.
This is KDNK. You've been listening to Shifting Gears. I've been speaking with Scott Sampson about how to raise a wild child.